Joseph Arthur and his Technicolor Dreamcast on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Back when I was a wee lad in the 90s, I moved to Atlanta. I was a bass player. I slapped and popped on the bass, and I was in a band called Ten Zen Men. We moved to Alta Avenue in Little Five Points. It was awesome. I grew up in Ohio, 0 to 18 in Akron, so this was my first excursion into what I perceived to be a new life, a big city life. And we hit the scene. We played, I think, the Cotton Club and the Point, and there was such a music scene there. And one guy you always heard about was James Hall. He was the most talented person on earth, basically. I'm not even exaggerating. Everybody knew this guy was the best. He played trumpet. He sang kind of like Bowie, and he was otherworldly. He remains otherworldly. He is my next guest. He's an American rock singer and guitarist, best known for his gothic style lyrics. Marilyn Manson is also a big fan. Distinctive voice, avant-garde performance, and eclectic compositions. He was the charismatic frontman for Marry My Hope, a mid-80s Atlanta-based band whose music formed a bridge between the remnants of goth, glam, and dark metal-tinged styles of today, a missing link between Love and Rockets and the Smashing Pumpkins, and so much more. James Hall, welcome to the show, my friend. Oh, also, I ended up writing songs with his son in later years, Liam Hall, who is known as Grandma, or ATL Grandma, who is also insanely talented. So the thing didn't fall far from the tree? How does that phrase go? Anyway, James, welcome to the show. How are you doing?
Hey, great. Good to see your face, Joe.
Good to see you, man. You're dressed snazzy. I can see an outfit. I feel like, you know, you told me you just got back from a video shoot. Is that the getup you wore on the video shoot? Plus TNT, I keep seeing, has been playing some of your videos on the weekends, and it's awesome. Oh, cool. Stuff. But yeah, so what's cool going on? Is that your outfit from the video shoot? What were you doing today?
No, it's actually, I'm relaxing. It was an early call. It was 7 a.m. Held outside of the University of Alabama, Birmingham Medical Suites. And it was shot before a fence in downtown Birmingham. So it was up early. I had kind of a shirt and tie worn military style. And as I was shooting the video, it kind of occurred to me that at 56, the age that I'm at, or most of the people that trained at University of Alabama, Birmingham's medical practice there, most of them are retiring now that they're my age. I thought it was quite an interesting scene to be filming a music video on the street out in front of there. And I know that age is not really like a number, nothing but a number, but at the same time, it is offering unique perspective, especially when we're doing a song called Dead Naming in Your Goal Voice.
Dead naming in your goal voice, I asked you on the break, is that about dead naming transgender? You said it was that, and dead naming MCs. Explain yourself, sir, and I want to get into age right after that as well, because that's interesting.
Dead naming, I've come to understand, is it's sort of like outing somebody's past, okay? Which is, it's purely from a judgmental kind of standpoint, which is, it doesn't really interest me in common practice. You know, you did this in 1992. Fuck you, man.
James. No cursing.
Oh, sorry,
we're
about that.
Friendly. That's so, all right.
Okay, apologize about that. But that doesn't really interest me. However, when we turn words and turn phrases, okay, it's like somebody might say, I have a unique voice. And then also there might be somebody who is like, well, he's kind of the golden voice of lounge jazz. Gold voice carries a level of inauthenticity to it. And then also naming against the backdrop of dead naming, and then all of the loaded form that dead naming carries to it. That sort of stuff has always interested me. So when when it comes to titling songs, which is something I probably do more commonly than write songs, titling songs, I look for something that's got a little bit of, it carries a load to it. That would I say that in my, you know, recovering electrician history, you know, if something carries a load, watch out, it'll shock you.
Now, I didn't ask you before because I didn't know we were going to go into dead naming in your goal voice, but can you play that tune for us? Is that one of these things you could? Oh, right. Let's hear it. Let's hear dead naming in your goal voice from the one and only.
All right, let's see how it sounds.
Hall.
Do ya feel free when you're talking to me? Do ya feel free when you're talking to me? Feel the back of my lap when I lift up the sheets. Do ya feel free when you're talking to me? Do ya feel free when you're talking to me? Do ya feel free when you're talking to me? See me back with the things that I wanna see. Do ya feel free when you're talking to me? You get a cup when I hit you with my backhand. Two cuts and you need a new game plan. Three free, walk free, yeah, you're looking for me. Go and put me in your phone as your main man. You get a cup when I hit you with my backhand. Two cuts and you need a new game plan. Three free, walk free, yeah, you're looking for me. Don't put me in your phone as your main man.
Stuff, man, as rocking as it comes. I think, you know, you're still writing rock anthems, man. And you were talking about your age, 56, which is really still young, you know. And funny, though, people do go into retirement at that sort of age, but their life isn't even nearly over at that point. You got to do something with your time. So retirement at 56 seems kind of ridiculous. But as a rock and roller out there shooting videos, I mean, still writing songs that rock that hard. Do you ever have internal struggles with like this identity of being an older, so to speak, gentleman, and still wanting to rock this hard?
Well, we talked a little bit about the practice of journaling every day, and so today the title is usually the reason I do it is because it usually yields like a title or something, an idea to work with, and so. To start the day off there, it came yesterday. The title from yesterday was Stay Where I Put You, which was overheard from Gustav Falco to a pal of mine who tried to modulate out of the very, very stuck F-sharp blues that Tav Falco was playing. And my buddy Brian, he starts to go, take it up to B, and he tells you know, Dave Rosser to take it up to the key of B, and Tav Falco turns around, he's like, stay where I put you! and so, for whatever reason, stay where I put you. I mean, that's just a title right there. And then just right now, as I was thinking, as we're talking about retirement, you know, retiring. I'm retiring from the straight life. And that's a title right there.
Mm-hmm. It is.
Retiring from the straight life.
Okay, because you tried the straight life. I mean, it seems to me you're revitalized, James. There was a period where you were kind of immersed in the straight life. And maybe this is just my perception. And, you know, we've not always been in close touch or anything like that, you know, so I don't really know the ins and outs of your world, but I sort of pick up stuff, you know, and you raised Liam, married and all that, and you were doing your stuff with charity books for Africa and what maybe could be considered less of a rock and roll existence. Are you saying you're retired from the straight life? Are you more dedicated to rock and roll again? I guess that's what I'm picking up.
You know, it's kind of a funny thing that, so I'm, and it's kind of a, to call like dedicating to rock and roll or anything. I mean, I certainly, edgy music for any form, stuff that like rides the line a bit creatively.
That's what I mean by rock and roll, by the way.
Yeah.
It could be a drum machine. It doesn't have to be the Rolling Stones or sound like
it
Black
doesn't.
Rose.
And it was evidence today too, as well. Cause on the drive back, we were listening to a jazz hit that from 1988 called Calling You. And, Jovita Steele had the hit with it, as a result of her performing it as part of the soundtrack to Baghdad Cafe. And it was such a edgy piece of music to me as a listener, as a set of ears in 1992 or three, or when it came on my radar, because it's a chorus that's written from a half step rundown. Like, I'm calling you. That's all it is. What? How the hell is that supposed to work? But therein is its kind of miracle, because it's like, well, God, no one would think that. But someone did. And so anything that's kind of got like a break the mold feel to it. And I don't right. have to break the mold. But anything that occurs to me is at least maybe even breaking my own mold. Yeah, that's interesting to me.
But are you re-energized with music then? I don't have to classify it as rock and roll, but just it seems to me you're coming into a sort of new season of just being more and more energized by music again. You said you were retired from the straight life. Is that what you mean by that?
That was just an idea, because I was thinking about like my age and retirement, and then also like, okay, well, what would what would a lifer musician retire from? Retire from the straight life, or you know, because it could very well be, you know, we get to a point where, you know, you could be fostering your authentic creative self, even though you've had an entire life before picking up the paintbrush. Certainly you've met people along the way that learned painting, that, you know, have doing graphic arts and painting and expression in that medium. They learned it late in life.
Absolutely. No, I'm a big fan of that. I think, like, I don't know. I feel, well, because we come from a generation where, you know, we were supposedly done by 27. So that was in our psychology that this was like, and certainly by 30, you're way over the hill. And meanwhile, the Rolling Stones, I mean, dude, their last record sounds great. I heard it at the gym the other day, that, you know, Don't Get Angry or something, Anger, that song. It's good, man. It rocks. And Pearl Jam just put out a new record that rocks, and so did the Black Keys. There doesn't seem to be an age limit. And, you know, you keep resisting saying that you are revitalized, or you aren't saying it. But it seems to me...
Maybe I'm lodging it because I...
You seem to be.
But I do believe that as a result of applying myself to living a certain way, and maybe I'll ask you this, but I mean, it's probably better for me to speak for myself, but by applying myself to living to a certain criteria, I am more inclined to be inspired than not.
Okay. Let's pick that up on the other side of the break, because I want to find out what kind of criteria you are living by, and maybe you can unlock the secret ingredients to staying vital into your 50s and beyond. We'll be right back after these words on TNT.
TNT's Chris Smith.
The latest terror attack to occur in the world. And then an inexplicable violent attack on police, at about 20 police vehicles as well, by the very churchgoers who police had turned up to support. Bizarre, but maybe not as bizarre as I'm about to explain to you. It is ghastly stuff. But do you not think that this is happening elsewhere? Do you not think that with 200 different cultures in a city like Sydney, that these kinds of hatreds, this kind of extremism, are you saying that that doesn't go on? That this is a one-off? I doubt whether you have actually grown up in the southwestern part of Sydney, as I have. Because I'm telling you right now, as soon as 200 cultures got together about 25 to 30 years ago, it started.
Chris Smith on today's News Talk, TNT. Without CO2, the world stops breathing. CO2 sustains all life on Earth. Government, the WEF, and the elite believe humans are the carbon they really want to be rid of. Today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
And we're back with Marilyn Manson's biggest inspiration, James Hall. James, I hope that doesn't bug you if I say that, but it's true. He has cited you as a huge inspiration. You've rocked with him, and he's covered your songs and that kind of thing. But you were just talking about before the break how a certain way you've been living, a certain criteria you've been living under, has led to continued expansion and inspiration. Explain that to us. What kind of lifestyle do you choose to live? What do you think helps in maintaining inspiration?
Ironically, I guess a straight life of sorts. You know, we're talking about retiring from the straight life, but in a manner of speaking, normalizing my life and normalizing my schedule, it has helped me a lot. So it was probably not even a year ago that I started asking myself, okay, if I treat 8 hours of rest almost like a job, like you're just punching the clock. And okay, this is sleep time. All right, punching the clock in at 10 p.m., waking up at 6. Is it possible that I could start to benefit from that? And I believe that I have a lot more emotional regulation as a result. And you know, does it mean that it's going to cure me of laughing at inopportune times? I don't know if it will, because there's sometimes things I just burst into laughing, and it's perhaps not even something funny. But at the same time, I do believe it's helped me in terms of focus, and it has helped me in terms of not getting too tired when an inspiration is happening or something like that. I do believe that throughout, you know, the 90s and when I was younger and the 2000s, that I was probably clocking about 4 hours, 5 hours of rest on a nightly basis. And I think that I suffered as a result of it. And so I've gotten a bit more on purpose about valuing myself enough to create some boundaries around my rest time.
And so you think it's like keeping a schedule like that that's leading to this sort of rejuvenated vision towards rock and roll and some of the stuff you're doing, like making the video today. Is that for a James Hall album or is it for a band album?
That is from Ladies Of. Okay. But in terms of me integrating, put it this way, intentional habits, in other words, not the ones I unconsciously attract and magnetize, the stuff that that I intentionally do for either a mental, physical, or spiritual health payback. Those are the things that have made a big difference, no matter what creative thing I'm doing, whether it's Ladies Of or solo or any collaborative work. So, and sleep is just one component of it, because, you know, I'm journaling. I guess I'm eating a little bit differently too as well. So, I think that I've considered what it means to have a relationship with yourself. If I asked my 20-year-old self, you know, something searching like, you know, how's your conduct? Or if I, you know, hey, James, what's your relationship like with yourself at age 20? You know, I think the only solid answer would be, whatever, dude. And as I'm getting older, I start realizing that there's a point to having a relationship with oneself.
And how do you have a relationship with yourself? I mean, I know you practice yoga as well. I'm assuming that sort of factors in, and maybe taking care of yourself. But the spiritual gurus always talk about overcoming the self. So it's like dismantling the self. But you're talking about relating to the self, where I'm trying to relate to presence and sort of eliminate the self. It seems like the more I'm in the self, the further away I am from presence, and yet I do a lot of things to take care of the so-called self.
Yes. So that's, I would entirely agree with you. What I've learned is that, for many years I was thinking about myself. Okay. And thinking about myself, you know, is an entirely different thing than caring for myself. Caring for myself actually allows me to consider others and other people's plight. And mm-hmm. So that's part of it. But I also think that treating myself, because I do follow Marianne Williamson and what she's had to say, because she worded it in her commentary on Course in Miracles that, like, it doesn't matter what level of neglect we may have endured as children, how we were in response to that regret toward ourselves was positively vicious. And learning to kind of catch that and realize how much suffering that creates can really, really help. And so in terms of, simplifying, and this would be probably also it too as well, is it's simplifying my relationship with the God of my understanding and simplifying my relationship with myself too.
Maybe when you say simplify, trying to not think, that's the whole crux of it, right? Being present and sort of observing thought. I mean, like, I'm wondering how you simplify it. I guess you've brought up the Course in Miracles to me before in personal conversations. What do you find about that? Is that supposed to be channeled and like the wisdom of Jesus, pretty much, right?
It's I think that they certainly use the Christian terminology, and there's perhaps a lot of, open to a lot of criticisms. But I think the crux of it is to change our perceptions to where we are no longer identifying with the ego, which seems to only want to attack and create separation, and to really foster an identification with the sonship, wherein all of us are sharing as part of the God experience, and in so doing we're all special. And on the other side of the coin, we're not that special. so all of us it's getting out of the ego's dream of separation. And so the ideal of like a study in Course in Miracles is to cleanse our perception to the point to where we can actually see both ourselves and others as they really truly are, as children of God.
Well, I go through these things where sometimes it feels like I'm like really overcoming my ego, and I'm in states of observation a lot, and I'm liberated from being sort of thought dominated, I would say. And I think, wow, I've really got it now. I'm really on it. I'm like, this must be what enlightenment is. And then I'll find myself like backstepping, or life will happen and some problems will occur, and I'll be back in the grind of it. I'll pick up bad habits again. It'll be like, two steps forward, three steps back, that type of thing. Do you deal with that yourself? And how do you sort of overcome if you do?
Well, I began promoting a show in Atlanta on Thursday of this week. It's for May 12th. And I found out the following day that the venue had changed. And and immediately it conjured up all sorts of negative feelings toward all of clubdom and all of small venue. And I was probably like, thigh high in indignation, waters of indignation. And I just got to remember, because it's so easy to forget that, Barbara Streisand isn't necessarily having any easier of a time getting through Thursday than I am. It doesn't matter how big of a name you are, there's still going to be stuff that challenges you. There's going to still be stuff that challenges my ego. And this was it. I was getting caught up in it. And I had to remember that, for instance, contextually, when Hurricane Katrina happened, the injustice of 3 feet of water in your house, right? The injustice of catastrophic loss, okay? And I can just sit in that and waller all day. Or I can accept that at some level in the universe, this is supposed to be happening. The show is supposed to be here, not there. And once I accept that, well, then there's the opportunity. How do I make this the new focus? And just because we have like a fixed idea about what should, and all these quotes around should be, you know, it rarely goes as expected.
And so how do you stave off discouragement in those times? I mean, you bring up like playing small clubs. I was having a conversation with a friend recently. They were talking about Billy Joel in Madison Square Garden, and I got a little bit irate in a funny way. But she said, like, can you believe, you know, Billy Joel still doing that at his age? I mean, how does he do it? And I'm like, are you kidding? He takes a limo to Madison Square Gardens where his setup is already like completely sound. He can phone that stuff in. And I was kidding. Who knows? I mean, all credit to Billy Joel. I'm not like trying to diss, but I'm like, the real hard life is lugging your equipment into clubs. You have to sound check yourself. The sound guy's, you know, pissed off at you, and you probably snapped at him, and so he's like making your monitor feedback. I mean, I'm like, come on, people in that situation, like Barbra Streisand that you mentioned, or Billy Joel, they do have it easier in terms of professional life. I mean, you're somebody still slugging it out in the clubs, as am I. And, you know, sometimes we've experienced greater forms of success as well. It is difficult, and it is, you know, it is hard. I wonder how you stave off discouragement.
Well, I think that keeping it into context, that if I just stay in the day and stay in the moment, and I remember that, you know, that, you know, Austin is running the front of house, and, you know, Pete's working the kitchen, and like, we're all here together on a Sunday night. And the miracle is, can this be a memorable and actually really enjoyable night of work or play, no matter what you're there to do? And not that I have control over anything other than my own attitude about it, but I can certainly plug into what is already working and optimize it. And some might say that that's probably even my strongest suit. Like, a good rhythm happens in the rock and roll room, in the rehearsal room. And like, oh, this shit's working. This stuff's working. And then to go with that, maybe that's where, you know, I'm at my best.
Mm. Are you, I've been a creative for a long time, mostly in music and painting, but I have other ambitions in other creative fields. We're talking about being in our 50s now. Do you find you have other ambitions, other goals that you want to do? And do you have any issues in pursuing them? Like any struggles with staying consistent or anything like that?
That's an excellent question. So I've learned that perhaps my challenge is organization.
Me too, bro. That's my biggest challenge.
My girlfriend, she said, you know, it's not that you're not disciplined, it's not that you're not creative, it's not that you don't work hard, but you're highly disorganized. And so it can eat up a lot of storage space in the brain, because I don't have anything really down on paper. I don't really have anything either loaded into a spreadsheet. And it's not that like spreadsheets saved my life, but like I found that when I became willing to enter new ideas into just a graph form, and they say, okay, I'm 30% of the way there with lyrics. All right, music's already tight. I've recorded it, haven't uploaded it yet. You know, all of those kind of things, it'll actually allow me to see the level of progress made and also work still needed. And having that even skeletal level of organization was a big learning curve, a big lesson for me. Because, you know, for years and years, walking around with fragments of songs in the old brain, and, well, this is kind of done, you know, this is kind of an idea, or it's kind of a squiggly, and then we gotta understand that, like, some of the most catchy things that I've been lucky enough to write or happen on over the years, they were really skeletal. They were barely there. But with a little push to have some level of process, we can carry them across the finish line and then maybe enjoy them once they're sitting in repose.
What about other creative pursuits, like writing a book or doing a film or something else? Like, have you wanted to branch off?
In terms of getting into other stuff like that, I haven't really felt like a strong desire to get in there and to do that. But people have certainly said to me, "You should write a book," or "You should do this." And you know, for my own part, I'm trying to strike "should" from my lexicon, to where you should do that, you ought to do that, because I find that that's not really a very kind way of self-talk. And certainly probably not a very kind way of, you know, addressing others. But let me interject,
you know, because in our day and age, I mean, back when the times we're talking about, the sort of 90s and stuff, you didn't have all this responsibility to market yourself. So the marketing aspect of being an artist these days means that social media becomes paramount. You know, it becomes really important. And to pursue social media in a competitive way means you got to start a YouTube channel. You got to, like, create self-help content or something other than music. It has to be like it feels that way to me. And I do have motivations in those realms as well. So it's easy for me to jump into that and then be overwhelmed by wanting to pursue too many things. I'm just wondering if like even the relationship with social media sort of opens up an invitation to pursue social media, for instance. That's a different pursuit than music.
It is. I haven't been really deeply tempted by it because I'm a pretty basic guy where it comes to electronics and screen technology. I understand that I'm on some technology that I absolutely do not understand, that we're able to do this across the continent and talk as if we're real time. However, you know, if I'm going to scale it back to a desire to help, a desire to share, yeah, I do. But I also know that that getting too much screen time for me is not good.
Right.
And I'll say that with, you know, even talking to Liam, you know, when he said, "No, taking a break from the screen is part of it too. Taking a break from the stereo speakers for a while. If I listen to the same mix over and over and over again, or the same artists over and over again, I start losing frequencies."
Yeah, you can't hear it anymore.
And they can't hear it anymore. And so I do have a desire to have a full life and a full creative life, and for it to be creative in as many capacities as possible. But in terms of, writing a book, or, I mean, if I've been journaling since 2005, more or less every day, do I write a book every day? I don't know. I mean, but we ask ourselves, okay, well, what is that? I do think that practice for me, that intentional habit for me, has yielded good results.
Yeah, "Do I Write the Book Every Day" is a good song title. Let me take a quick break, and we'll be back with another anthem by Mr. James Hall right after these words on TNT.
Hi, I'm Susan Lucci. I never thought about heart disease until I had my own heart event. At first, like so many other women out there, I ignored my symptoms. A slight pressure on my chest, shortness of breath. I thought, I don't have time to be sick. I had a 90% blockage in my main artery and a 75% blockage in the adjacent artery. I received 2 stents in my arteries. Stents developed through research funded by the American Heart Association. Those stents saved my life. I'm so grateful to the American Heart Association. Their research helped save my life. I can enjoy life with my children, my grandchildren, and my friends. Please, listen to your heart. The only reason I'm here today is because I did. Learn more about the American Heart Association's life-saving work at helpheart.org.
Prescription drug pricing points to corporate
Freedom of the press is about your right to know. It's about your right to be informed. Today, there are real threats to press freedom and your right to know about the world around us. We must protect our right to know, no matter what kind of news is important to you. Before it's too late, understand the threats. ProtectPressFreedom.org.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT, with Joseph Arthur and his Technicolor Dreamcast.
Back with James Hall, who just asked me, now that I'm 26 years old, is there certain things that are possible that I'm 26 that weren't when I was 12? That's not really, I'm 52, and he asked me if things were possible that I'm 52 that weren't when I was 19. Anyway, I don't even know how to answer that. I'm not really too sure. No answer comes to mind. He asked me that on the break, and so I'm bringing it into the show. But I suppose, man, life is a trip. It just changes. I mean, I retired from the rock and roll life into more of the straight life. I mean, my life largely revolves around being a dad now. So in that, I mean, obviously that's opened up a world of different possibilities. For one, I spend enormous amounts of time on a playground, you know, and so it's interesting. And that feels like a privilege and a gift, actually. But my life is much more a life of service, really, to another being than it's ever been before. So that's how I would answer that. What about for you?
Without question, when I even look at just the simplicity of like opening up a fridge and pulling out a mixed bag of ingredients and throwing it in the skillet and actually coming away with something really delicious and good, I mean, that would be impossible at age 20.
Yeah.
Impossible.
Not for me, James. I cooked for a living for a while, and I'm still a banger of a cook.
Yeah, and you're still good.
Yeah, and I make my daughter meals, and then she eats like 3 bites. It's pretty frustrating. Yes. But
that
there you go.
That is age appropriate.
Yeah.
That's age appropriate. I remember Liam's mom saying, "Hey, have you fed him anything?" I haven't fed him anything. Well, because it seems to be he's running for 3 or 4 days off of 1 goldfish cracker and a raisin.
Yeah. I get asked that all the time. When did she
last eat? Where's he getting his energy from? We don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. It's an interesting aging, man.
And then when I think about this too as well, were you painting at all at age 20?
Oh yeah. I started painting.
You were. Okay.
Yeah, I was painting all the way through. I've been painting. I never stopped painting, really, you know. So yeah, painting's always been right there with music for me. I mean, I started both of those really young, you know, and so they've been the sort of chief priorities of my creative life for a long time. And I have lots of ambition to write as well, and I do write. But to focus it and organize it in a similar way. I mean, I sort of have new creative visions that I want to pursue. And so, yeah. But music, you know, it feels, I just finished a record, or I'm almost finished with a record, and just trying to think about how to market it, you know, because marketing as well, like back in the 90s, we were always told, you know, if you try to get money or success, you're a sellout. But Now I watch a lot of these YouTubers on marketing and like Dan Coe and Alex Hormozi and these big business people, entrepreneurial, I can't say that word, YouTubers who sort of talk about building your brand and all that kind of stuff. I mean, and then even to get a record deal or not, or just build your own brand up and being consistent with that, it just, the whole thing seems to have spidered off into so many different directions. And if you're somebody, like you said, who has a hard time organizing, even just getting songs complete and stuff, it seems like the stakes are amped way, way up in terms of becoming a viable artist in this day and age. It's almost like Andy Warhol made the sort of, the blueprint for it, I guess. He was like a business guy that organized and pursued all these things. I think he would do excellent these days. But a lot of us who are artists, we're sort of scatterbrained, or the people that can hear songs or channel songs, they seem to be scattered in other ways. So it's about becoming, I think, a more complete human being in a way.
Well, certainly balanced.
Yeah.
And I would say that that's where most of us find that success can lead us where we are, by engaging the capabilities of our right and left hemispheres. And look, and this is nothing that I'm an expert at, but I am aware enough that the right hemisphere is often associated with creative output. The left hemisphere is more associated with more pragmatic and logical output, but both can serve the common goal, and perhaps applying a certain balance to that can end up allowing opportunity to meet us where we are. And so in that line of thinking, you don't, Joe, have to become anything other than your natural self. You don't, there's no, coding acumen that you've got to learn or anything to do that. But, however, being willing to apply some of the acumen for organization that was God-given from early on in your left brain to your life as you live it now can allow opportunity to meet you where you are now.
Nice.
And so some of that changing my narrative about it, because at one point in time it was, the only thing that matters is your creative output.
Right.
And that was a narrative that I had to really call into question.
Yeah.
And maybe we talked about that back in January, but I'm still at that point where I'm going to have to honor that I have some degree of organization skills. I'm not an entirely a neophyte, even if I have to apply discipline to more organizational areas as opposed to entirely creative areas.
Well said, man. You could be a therapist. Anyway, James, you got another song for us. Play us another jam.
All right. It's pretty new. It's called Slow Burning. Let the record show that I did my best. Loading up the pickup truck, heading due west. By the time I got to Memphis, I was losing my mind. Turned around before I hit the Arkansas line. Slow burning, wheels turning. The doctor said the running was good for my health. But at the end of the road, there's no escaping yourself. We were barely 20 when we tied the knot. In your wedding dress, showing you were still white hot. 10 years later, more kids in tow. Work dried up and it was time to go. Slow burning, wheels turning.
The doctor said that running was good for my health. But at the end of the road, there's no escaping yourself. Look out, son, hit it out there. These streets ain't paved with gold. You can feel the rhythm in your heart. Keep the kingdom in your soul. Early in the morning, I'm heading back east. And the rest of my life to try and live this down. Slow burning, wheels turning. The doctor said that running was good for my health. But at the end of the road, there's no escaping yourself. There's plenty of things that you could buy with your wealth. But at the end of the road, there's no escaping yourself. Though burning, wheels turning. All the way to Baltimore, I was losing my mind. Turn around before I hit the Arkansas line.
Beautiful, man. Has a Zeppelin quality to it. I haven't really heard you do a number like that before. I'm wondering, when you write that, is writing for you music wise like a daily process, or is it just something when inspiration strikes?
That would also be an application of engaging the dual hemisphere approach. My right brain wants to write when the inspiration happens. My left brain knows that there are certain times where one has to get busy.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't mean that, like, okay, well, if you're absolutely traumatized or fearful, that you should necessarily write a song. But at the same time, to be willing to be kind of recognize it, like, okay, I'm not really that inspired, but let's take a look at things here. Let's take a look. Let's rifle through a briefcase of old ideas and see if anything jumps out. And so it doesn't necessarily have to be waiting for inspiration. In fact, like I said, you know, by creating some of the intentional habits, and I've said before, the intentional habits make the man. And if it's a really full statement, it's the intentional habits that make the man that I want to be. And if that's the case, some of these intentional habits do give way toward being more inclined to be inspired than not.
Yeah. Let me ask you this real quick. We got 1 minute left. If you could tell we talked about age a lot. If you could tell your younger self, the guy in Atlanta and Marry My Hope, anything at all, from your state of mind now, what would that be?
Enjoy the relatively pain-free existence of your years.
Amazing, man. You must be proud of Liam, too. I can't imagine just having a kid that's that talented at art and music himself, and just... good job with that, man.
From one father to another father, get ready, because the love you feel for your daughter right now is going to continue to deepen and grow.
Oh, man, I've felt that already. James, tell people where to find you real quick. We got 30 seconds.
GotJamesHall.com. You got me on all streaming platforms.
James Hall, everybody. He is a legend. Go check out JamesHall.com. And thanks, James, for coming on. Thanks, everyone, for listening. Keep listening to TNT and have a great weekend.